Okay, good afternoon, everyone. So I'm going to be talking today about implementing innovative practices in resource-poor nursing homes. And I'll talk in just a minute about and give a definition of that. And it's looking at comparing culture change and palliative care. So I want to begin, though, by acknowledging my, my colleagues who worked on this project with me, Renee Shield and Susan Miller. And I'd also like to acknowledge that the research was funded by a grant from the Commonwealth Fund. Okay, so just by way of introduction, the quality of care provided in U.S. nursing homes has been a concern for many years. And this is especially true in the case of resource-poor nursing homes that rely heavily on Medicaid, which is the U.S. government program that provides health care to the poor. And multiple studies have found that these high Medicaid facilities often have lower quality care, worse outcomes for residents, lower staffing, and a host of other troubling issues. These facilities have also been found to be less likely to implement innovative new practices. However, a nationally representative survey that we conducted found that some of these high Medicaid facilities have implemented innovative new practices. So the purpose of this study was to identify factors that enable some high Medicaid nursing homes to implement innovative practices. So research on the diffusion of innovative practices in healthcare organizations has focused primarily on two types of diffusion: diffusion between individuals within the same organization and diffusion between organizations. And both of these types of diffusion are really necessary for the successful implementation of innovative practices, and each relies on a complementary set of factors for their success. And these factors can be categorized most simply into factors that are internal to the organization and factors that are external to the organization. So internal factors that have previously been found to be related to implementation of innovative practices are the characteristics of the organization itself, such as organizational structure and size, and also characteristics of those adopting the innovative practice, such as communication styles and interpersonal skills. External factors include attributes of the innovation, such as its compatibility with the goals of the organization. External factors also include attributes of the environment, such as interpersonal relationships among leaders in different organizations, mass media attention to the innovation, and the intentional spread of the innovation by formal networks and champions. But one difficulty in applying these previous research findings to the realm of high Medicaid nursing homes is that much of the previous research has focused on hospitals. And the little research that has focused specifically on nursing homes focuses really on above average organizations, sometimes called early adopters. So there's been very little research that's focused on the special challenges that are often faced by resource-poor nursing homes. So as I had mentioned, the purpose of the study was to determine what internal and external factors may enable some high Medicaid nursing homes to implement innovative practices. And so to do this, we examined two types of innovative practices in nursing homes: culture change and palliative care. And both of these have been in existence in nursing homes in the U.S. for more than a decade. So for those who aren't familiar with the term culture change, culture change is kind of a movement that aims to alter the way care is provided by making nursing homes more home-like and less institutional, by providing care that's more resident-centered and focused on the preferences and desires of care recipients. Nursing home culture change has been operationalized through physical changes, such as removing nursing stations, and through organizational changes, such as increasing the autonomy of direct care workers. And specific practices include such things as resident choice in dining, bathing, and sleep times, consistent assignment of nurse aides, and also the provision of private rooms. So non-hospice palliative care is defined as care provided to individuals with serious or life-threatening illnesses who may not qualify for or choose to enroll in hospice, which generally refers to end-of-life care paid through the Medicare program, which is the health insurance program providing care to the elderly in the U.S. So in the U.S., most nursing home hospice is provided by outside companies that send hospice nurses and aides into the nursing home. So by asking about non-hospice palliative care, we were really trying to get at practices and processes that nursing homes had built themselves, so services that they could provide without outside help. So therefore, we defined palliative care as something provided by an interdisciplinary team that supports patients and families in their psychosocial needs and addresses physical, intellectual, emotional, social, and spiritual needs, all while facilitating patient autonomy, access to information, and choice. And specific palliative care practices include pain management, non-pharmacological therapies, respite for family members, advanced directives, and psychological and spiritual care. And these practices, according to our definition, are provided to those at the end of life, but also to those suffering from chronic conditions such as dementia. Okay, so just a little overview of our methods, and I'll detail each step in just a minute. But we identified high Medicaid nursing homes that varied on their extent of culture change and palliative care practices. And we conducted telephone interviews with four nursing home administrators in each of four categories: low culture change and low palliative care, low culture change and high palliative care, high culture change and low palliative care, and high culture change and high palliative care. So we categorized the nursing homes as high or low culture change and high or low palliative care using data from a national survey that we had conducted in 2009 and 10. We surveyed nursing home administrators and directors of nursing, including 1,695 nursing homes where both of those people responded. And having both respondents was important for being able to calculate our culture change and palliative care scores. And the survey measured culture change practices and palliative care knowledge and practices, among many other things. So our survey included a set of questions on culture change, including questions about the physical environment, staff empowerment, and resident-centered care. And the survey questions were used in previous culture change surveys and had good measurement properties. And we also conducted cognitive-based interviews to reduce measurement error and increase data validity. We also asked a series of questions related to palliative care knowledge and practices, and these questions were derived from the validated nursing home palliative care survey, but we also cognitively tested those questions. So we used the online survey certification and reporting data to identify high Medicaid nursing homes that had responded to our survey. And OSCAR is a database that includes data for most U.S. nursing homes, and it's that's collected during annual inspection surveys. And in order to be considered resource poor, the facility's OSCAR data had to indicate that the nursing home had greater than 80% of their residents' care paid for by the Medicaid program. So based on this definition, 191 of our responding nursing homes were considered resource poor. 89 of those facilities had both culture change and palliative care scores available, and as I mentioned, that required both the administrator and the director of nursing to respond. And then culture change was considered high when the facility's culture change score was above the median among all respondents, and the palliative care was considered high when both the knowledge and practices scores were above the median, and they were considered low when both were below the median. So when we removed the facilities that were high on one and not the other, we further reduced our sample. So the final sample broke down like this. We had 23 high Medicaid nursing homes that were low culture change and low palliative care. 11 were low culture change and high palliative care. 18 were high culture change and low palliative care. And 8 were high culture change and high palliative care. And then we randomly selected nursing homes in each of those four quadrants. And 8 nursing home administrators in each quadrant were mailed an introductory letter explaining the purpose of the study, and then I called them to schedule a telephone interview. We had developed a draft interview protocol and pilot tested it with 3 nursing home administrators. And after each pilot interview, the protocol was revised by the study team. The questions were semi-structured and included broad questions with follow-up probes. We recorded and transcribed the interviews, and the interviews ranged from 15 to 40 minutes in length and averaged about 20 to 25 minutes. So we began each interview by briefly defining culture change and asking the administrator what practices came to mind when she thought of culture change. We then asked if the facility had implemented any culture change practices, and for those that had not implemented any practices, we asked why this was the case, what barriers to implementation existed, and what resources would be needed to overcome these barriers. For those that had implemented practices, we asked a whole series of questions. For example, how long have these practices been in place? How were these practices first started? What steps did you take to begin? Was someone at your facility responsible for starting or promoting these practices? Did you get help from an outside person or organization? Where did you get information about these practices? Have staff been involved in getting these practices off the ground? What would you say has been hard about incorporating these practices, and what have you done to overcome these challenges? And then we repeated these questions for palliative care by, again, first defining palliative care, asking what practices came to mind, and then asking if the facility had implemented any of those practices, and then repeated these questions. So we began data analysis after four interviews were complete, and we used a modified grounded theory approach where basically some of the coding categories emerged directly from the data and others represented predetermined categories. And this allowed us to find both unexpected findings as well as anticipated areas of interest. And then Renee and I coded all of the interviews independently and then met to come to consensus about coding and theme development. So here's the list of codes and code groups, and basically we had an idea of the expected code groups, but not many of the individual codes were what emerged from the data analysis. So in other words, we knew, obviously, that we'd hear about internal and external resources, but we weren't sure ahead of time what these would be. Okay, so just a brief overview of the findings. We found that since the time of our survey, most of the previously low culture change nursing homes, six out of eight of them, had begun utilizing at least some culture change practices. And this was in addition to the eight high culture change facilities that we had selected for interviews. But we did not find similar things around palliative care practices. So none of the administrators in low palliative care facilities reported implementing any new palliative care practices since our survey. In addition, administrators reported numerous ways that they had received information about assistance and information, actually, from outside entities for implementing culture change, but this was, again, not the case for palliative care. And even the facilities that reported utilizing some palliative care practices reported relying heavily on hospice organizations for both the palliative care needs of their residents and for information related to palliative care practices. So just a quick, I can probably skip that one. So as I had just mentioned, six of eight nursing homes who had low culture change scores on our survey reported implementing culture change practices during the 3 years since our survey. And interestingly, none of these high Medicaid facilities mentioned that financial resources were a barrier to culture change. Instead, several administrators we spoke to reported that their particular resident population had been a barrier to culture change. So for example, one culture change practice involves reworking dining in a way that involves greater resident choice in terms of food selection and dining times. And so several administrators had mentioned that their resident populations made adoption of that relatively popular culture change practice difficult. So for example, the administrator of a primarily Chinese population facility said, "But then I looked at our culture, looked at the Chinese dining method is totally different from the dining method here. The environment is not a romantic type or nice seating environment as it is in the Western world." Several administrators also mentioned that they had primarily psychiatric or behavioral populations and that this affected their culture change efforts. One said, "Well, I think partially because of the population, we're under the license of a skilled nursing home, but our average age here is 65 and predominantly male, and we have a higher percentage than normal of psych. I mean, we do have geriatric residents classified as that, but they're only a third of the population. With this population, dinner's not so much a social event." So due to the uniqueness of their populations, these facilities were later adopters of culture change practices. However, their late adoption resulted in 14 of the 16 facilities that we interviewed having adopted at least some culture change practices. And we found that to be in striking contrast to adoption of palliative care. Now, in the case of the two nursing homes that had still not implemented culture change practices, the administrators reported a belief that it was not necessary because culture change was simply a new name for good care, which was something that they had always provided. And so our coding label for that attitude was, "We already do that." And this "we already do that" attitude was found only among two facilities when it came to culture change, but it was actually very common with regard to palliative care. So as one administrator said about palliative care, "Yeah, we do it. I mean, I can't really think of anything specific to answer your question with. I mean, we do that basically on a daily basis with some of our folks." And when an administrator cited providing pain medication as a palliative care practice, I asked how long these practices had been in place, and she said, "Well, they began before I was here. I came here 6 years ago, so I mean, it's, you know, it's just part of our routine. We don't think about it as anything special. It's just something that we've always done." Now, the high Medicaid nursing homes who reported having implemented culture change practices had noted a plethora of external resources and information that they received. Administrators reported receiving information and support from state culture change coalitions and trade organizations, state agencies, other nursing homes, their corporate offices. They reported learning about culture change at conferences and seminars, through trade magazines, other print materials, and online, and also by visiting other nursing homes that had already implemented culture change practices. So for example, administrators describe receiving information through the two national nursing home trade organizations in the U.S., the American Healthcare Association and Leading Age. So one said, "It's been a big focus on resident-centered care and conferences, especially over the last 5 or 6 years. The ones I attended were generally conducted by the Texas Healthcare Association. I've also attended national conferences, a few national conferences sponsored by the American Healthcare Association." Administrators also mentioned that the surveyors in their state had begun to push culture change practices, and one noted that this was actually a change from his previous experience where the surveyors had been considered a hindrance to culture change. So he said, "It was just a fight, as all nursing homes go through with the surveyors all the time, you know. It's something new and they don't like it, and 5 or 6 years later, they're all advocating it." And another said, "I had surveyors over the years in Washington State talk about the concept of, please make your facility more home-like and less institutional." So administrators also discussed relationships they had with other nursing homes that were farther along in their culture change efforts. As one said, "We visited several nursing homes nearby and gathered some good feedback from those nursing homes, and they tell us what they like and what they don't like. So that's how we started with the design of our new building." And a common theme we heard from administrators in both high and low palliative care facilities was that they tended to rely almost exclusively on outside hospice organizations for both the palliative care needs of their residents and also for information on palliative care. And we found that beyond vague references to comfort care or pain management, other palliative care practices were rarely cited. So for example, one administrator said, "The way it kind of works here is that if we're receiving orders like they come right from the hospital just on palliative care, we kind of go based off what the doctor's ordered. So I mean, some people do. I mean, we've had a couple of people come in on palliative care that's just kind of caring comfort non-hospice, but I mean, it's rare. It's rare." When asked where they had received information about palliative care practices, most administrators reported receiving training or information only from hospice contractors. So as one said, "Because we have very close relationship with the hospice companies that we have contracts with, we know how their process works." And when asked where he'd recommend other nursing homes get information about palliative care, another administrator said, "I would advise them to coordinate with the hospice agencies that they're already using, and then you can always in-service some palliative care from them. I mean, I think that's probably where we learned a lot of that." So in conclusion, most low culture change nursing homes had begun utilizing at least some culture change practices since the time of our survey. Administrators mentioned very few palliative care practices beyond comfort care and pain management, and these two things seem to be related to differences in the external resources available to these facilities. Administrators reported accessing information and resources related to culture change from multiple organizations, But in contrast, no administrators mentioned any external resources for palliative care beyond outside hospice companies. And so our results have some implications for practice. For example, palliative care advocates could learn from the culture change movement and build coalitions. In the U.S., culture change advocates have successfully brought together consumer groups, trade groups, and government agencies. In addition, palliative care may actually be able to kind of piggyback on culture change efforts, and this could be done by reframing the palliative care message to one of person-centeredness and shifting the focus from end of life to the idea that these are services and supports that should be provided to residents as part of a person-centered approach. Our study also has some policy implications in that culture change advocates appear to have successfully engaged state and federal governments. And this has resulted in policy changes that promote culture change, such as retraining state surveyors so that culture change practices are supported and promoted by the annual survey inspection process. And several states have also instituted pay-for-performance policies that financially support facilities through increased Medicaid payments for implementing culture change practices. And our recent research found that nursing homes had greater implementation of culture change when they resided in U.S. states with pay-for-performance policies. In contrast, palliative care advocates have drafted guidelines for state surveyors that do not seem to have taken hold. So palliative care advocates could focus more effort in this area. Thank you. Okay.
And this might be because I'm taking a UK perspective, you don't think there's anything going on there that palliative care was very much seen as someone else's business and very specialized? Or
in some ways, I think it's really that it's seen as something that's just done at the end of life and part of the more formally organized hospice system that we have in the U.S.
Yeah.
So it's kind of... Where I think culture change is a brand new idea, and that has some advantages for spreading it. When you're trying to kind of change the focus of something that already exists and almost kind of back it up from end of life to earlier than that, that's probably a big part of it, yeah.
Sorry, I missed the beginning, so maybe you already talked about this and poor resources, but I remember seeing an article in New York Times last week that many nursing homes have no nurses.
No nurses? No.
No nursing homes.
Well, that should not be possible.
In some states, they must have that 24 hours, 7 days.
Right. That's actually a federal regulation. Yeah.
Have it maybe in the daytime or maybe sometimes not at all.
So there. I believe in all states there must be at least one nurse on at the nursing home 24 hours a day.
No.
Yeah, I wonder if a kind of growing issue in the United States is assisted living facilities, and that they're really becoming what nursing homes were 10 or 20 years ago, and they don't have any requirements around having nursing staff.
Oh,
so it might be it. I didn't see that story.
Hi, I'm Karen Fisher. I'm interested in the group of respondents who said we already do that,
mm-hmm.
and whether you had any way of interrogating that further. Did they really already do that?
No, so really that was when we asked, well, what are you doing? Could you give us some examples? All they did really was parrot back to us what we had provided in the definition of palliative care and just tried to rearrange the words, perhaps, instead of saying comfort care, as the one quote had said, oh, we do care and comfort and pain management. That was all anyone said when they said we already do that. Yeah. And whether or not they really thought they did, or they were just kind of on the spot and saying, oh, well, you know, that's a little bit harder to tease out, I think.
Okay,
thank you.